TV crews show up at your airport and stick a mic in your face. Will you be ready? I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome in to the Aero News special feature, and thanks for downloading us today. My guest is Max Trescott, 2008 National CFI of the Year. Max was recently asked to comment on KNTV in the Bay Area about the Flight 1549 Miracle on the Hudson case. We see a lot of examples of media coverage which is not favorable to general aviation or aviation in general, and we see a lot of cases in which they just totally are clueless about the terminology or don't have enough background to accurately report what happened in a certain case. And Max, welcome in. Neither of those seem to be the case in your interview.
Hi, Paul. Thanks for the call today. No, I think you're right. This is one of those rare situations where there really wasn't much negative for them to find in that kind of story, which is always gratifying.
Well, and yet, despite the fact that they came off as a reputable news organization, they did appear to have a couple misconceptions, one of them being that when the engines on an airliner stop, control is lost. And you had not only the opportunity, but what's even more rare, the time to kind of straighten them out on that.
Yeah, I don't know that they were totally caught up in that. The very first question they asked me was something along the lines of GMAX pilots train for these kinds of scenarios. What type of, you know, training do they have for water landings? And I think I responded by saying that they do a lot of training, but water landings is probably one of the things they don't get a whole lot of emphasis on. But then I walked into talking about the things that they, you know, do train on in terms of having an engine shut down and returning back to the airport on just one engine, or having complete loss of power and having to glide the aircraft and so on. And then explain that it's pretty hard to, you know, simulate a water landing, and so that people aren't really practicing water landings per se unless they happen to be a seaplane pilot, but that touching down on the water in many ways is not dissimilar from trying to land on a runway, in the sense that you want to, you know, land under control with the wings level and touch down at the slowest possible speed.
Well, and if nothing else, it certainly is very analogous to a runway landing if you ever had to make one on the belly.
I would imagine so. And, from there, they picked up on the word control when I said something about, you know, keeping the aircraft under control. And, that's when I try to differentiate for them, you know, two kinds of accidents. The kind where, you know, aircraft are not under control, and those, you know, often end up in disaster. And those where they are under control, such as after a bird strike, where I pointed out, you know, all the controls are almost certainly going to still be working after a bird strike. So really it's just a matter of steering for where you want to put the glider down.
Well, and still there seemed to be a question about how the pilot was able to control the plane so well. And I hear this a lot. I think people have a misunderstanding about what it is that actually adjusts the attitude of an aircraft going through the air.
Yeah, the people I was talking with, you know, didn't seem to, you know, have any, you know, bad information on that, so that was good. But you're right. I think in general there's a misperception that, oh my gosh, if anything happens to an airplane, it's going to be a fireball.
I think
that's just the general reaction that people have.
Let's talk a little bit about Flight 1549 and the coverage you saw.
Mm-hmm.
I actually had to send an email offering kudos to my local TV station in Salt Lake City here for about 2 days into the post-event coverage. Somebody apparently got to them and got their attention, and I heard the word crash disappear from their coverage. They called it water landing, they called it emergency landing, they called it forced landing, but they didn't call it crash, and I found that very positive. And I actually heard someone call Sean Hannity on his radio show and take him to task for using the word crash. And he explained, well, it's just a layman's term. How do we fight this thing? And is it even worth it? Is it something that only we care about?
Boy, it's a good question. You know, with so much that went well with the coverage on this, I probably wouldn't mince words over that particular, you know, aspect of it. But I think there are so many kinds of things where there are, you know, terrible misperceptions out there. I know you talked with Ed Bolin here probably a week or so ago about, how the media is, looking at corporate aircraft these days. And I think that's a perfect example where, as he suggested, you know, we need to have, businesses stepping forward and talking about the positive aspects of, aircraft ownership and so on. So, you know, I think all of us as pilots and aircraft owners and, you know, need to be proactive in communicating the positive side of things. And that's unfortunately often lacking in the coverage that's out there.
Let me ask you how you came to be in a position to be contacted by KNTV for this interview. What are you in their Rolodex on a regular basis, or did they look you up and find you somewhere?
Well, I think it was both. I think I got into the Rolodex a few years ago because they looked me up, and I think that either was it may have been the plane crash that occurred in Mexico in 2000 when the Flying Doctors lost an aircraft down there. I was the vice president of that organization at the time, and I was at the scene of the crash when it occurred. So I think that's probably when I first ended up in some of the San Francisco Bay Area Rolodexes.
And how often have they called you since? Do they do this regularly?
Yeah, I would say probably once a year or so something will happen. So, for example, when the Corey Lytle crash occurred, they came out and I showed them exactly what a Cirrus looked like and where the parachute was located and those kinds of things. And every year or so, they'll call me up with something. This was the first time where they actually had me come into the studio to do it. And that worked out well because I actually had a couple of hours the preparation time as opposed to having to respond right on the spot. And I think that made a key difference in terms of the outcome.
Now, I know you have a little bit of radio background, and I know you're not shy about getting your face out in public. Do you welcome these opportunities, or are they a little bit butterfly?
I think they're fun. You're right. I worked in radio for 5 or 6 years when I was in college, and just absolutely loved it. Worked for 4 or 5 different stations. So, yeah, I find it fun being behind the microphone, and also have worked with the media to some extent when I was in the high-tech industry. I think communicating is an important aspect of every business, and it's it's something I think we all need to do to help promote a more favorable image of general aviation. So no, I never hesitate to jump in front of a microphone if I think I can enhance the understanding of things.
All right, I know that not everybody does enjoy those opportunities. Some people have it higher on their list of fears than death.
Right.
And so when we come back from the break, I want to have you talk a little bit to folks who might someday find themselves in these situations where they're asked to be involved with media coverage, and also maybe look at some areas in which we should seek out these opportunities.
Great.
My guest is Max Trescott, 2008 National CFI of the Year. We'll be back with more in just a moment. I'm Paul Plack, and you're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
You hear that sound? It's one of the all-time great inventions. Takes lids off cans just like that. But now, let's picture something even bigger. A tool that can take the lid off a whole airport. Actually, thousands of airports. It's a Garmin Wass GPS. Lets you make glide path approaches using runways that were once closed tight during IFR conditions. Hey, if you're gonna fly in the soup, you gotta have an opener. Garmin Wass GPS. Follow the leader.
Welcome back to the Aero News special feature. Paul Plack here with Max Trescott, talking about U.S. Airways Flight 1549, the media coverage that ensued, which included Max, if you were watching KNTV in California, and what you might do if you find yourself in a similar situation. First of all, Max, do you have any idea if there's a general assumption we can make on who is likely to get these calls when the media comes looking?
Boy, it's a good question. I think sometimes they, may show up in an airport and just look for anybody who looks like a pilot and stick a microphone in their face. That's going to be probably the most risky, type of situation.
Mm-hmm.
Folks who have, very prominent websites, especially anything that's related to safety, are probably more likely to get called. And I think that's why I had a call from one of the New York newspapers at the same time about Flight 1549 as well. But one of the first things I always want to figure out when I get one of these calls, as I did, for example, from the newspaper, which I hadn't had prior contact before, was what is their reputation? Do they tend to sensationalize? Do they have a reputation for doing gotcha journalism? You kind of have to figure out, is the interview going to be like having Mike Wallace show up on your door? And of course, in the past, people always realized that if Mike Wallace showed up at your door, that was kind of the kiss of death. So yeah, you want to kind of pre-screen and get an idea of the reputation of the outlet or the particular reporter, and decide whether it's a smart thing to talk with them or not.
Well, in this case, had you worked with KNTV before, or did you have to evaluate them this time?
I had, and so it was that prior relationship that made me very comfortable that they're a very responsible news organization, and I frankly felt it was going to be a fairly safe environment. I didn't expect them to play gotcha journalism with me. It was also a very positive story, so it struck me that it was highly unlikely that they were looking for, to sensationalize it in some particular way. So it really made it pretty safe in that particular case.
All right. Now, there is an understandable deer in the headlight effect that happens to a lot of people when they're first asked to do a TV, you know, a TV spot on a newscast. But aside from the butterflies and the nerves and just not being comfortable, what are the other mistakes people generally make when they're called on to do this? What do you see in watching coverage of these things around the country?
Boy, I think, you know, folks ought to ask themselves first, you know, are they really one of the best people to, you know, to answer the question or not? Are you extremely knowledgeable on the subject? Or is there someone else that you could refer them to that might do a better job either because they're more knowledgeable or they're a more effective communicator? So for example, you know, anytime, someone is called, they might want to think about, gee, is this something I want to refer, for example, to the press group at AOPA, for example? They're more than happy to answer questions from reporters, and they'd have a lot of experience with that. So I think people shouldn't immediately think, oh, you know, I should absolutely go ahead, you know, and answer this person's, you know, questions. They really ought to think about, you know, the reputation of the reporter, whether they know a lot about the subject, and how effective, you know, communicator you think you are. In other words, do you have past experience giving either public speeches or seminars? Do you think quickly on your feet? And also, have you ever taken a course on working with the media? There are courses out there. In fact, AOPA has one online. And those can really help you prepare for something like that.
Well, and you mentioned AOPA in particular, too. We should point out that AOPA has their own TV studio in Uplink, and they're not afraid to use it. They love the chance to, well, I guess from now on, it'll be have Craig go into the TV studio there and actually participate in a Brady Box on your local newscast.
Mm-hmm.
So they will do that. Assuming that you do wind up in a situation where you're the only one, what if you do have the particular expertise on a type of aircraft or knew the pilot or things like that? I can think of a couple of possible minefields here, but what are your initial recommendations?
Boy, I think, you know, anytime you're dealing with the press, you really want to understand what the story is going to be about, what their deadline is, you know, who else they have spoken to already. And then I would really like to ideally find out if there's a chance to look at the questions ahead of time. For example, I knew a couple hours before I was going down to CAN-TV, hey, this is a bird strike story, so I was able to research bird strikes a little bit. And, you know, that's where I was able to, you know, very calmly come up with, hey, FAA estimates 7,100 bird strikes a year. I didn't know that beforehand, but having had a little time to prepare, you know, I kind of guessed that was going to happen. And before I did go on the air, I asked them if they could show me the questions they were planning to ask. And it was literally, you know, 6 minutes before the broadcast, but just being able to see the three questions they had allowed me to pen a couple notes down very quickly. And that made it really easy to, you know, to come off looking fairly smart during the interview.
Do you ever have any concerns that you're going to say something that's going to wind up putting you in court? I think for a lot of people in this day and age, that's something that they're concerned about.
Yeah, I don't know about court, but certainly you'd like to come off looking as knowledgeable and effective as possible. I worry more about looking stupid than ending up in court. But yeah, I mean, the real issue of working with the press in general is that you have zero control over it. And so you have to accept that it is free publicity and that is valuable in many ways, but it comes with a price. And that price is they can, you know, take whatever little tiny snippet they want of everything you said. And, you know, sometimes you come off looking great, and other times you just kind of kick yourself and say, why did I do that?
Well, I do think of circumstances, though, where, you know, if there's been an accident at your airport and you say, yeah, you know, I was talking to him last night over a couple of beers, and he said he was having a problem with that aileron. You know, I mean,
yeah,
there are
exactly.
Things.
If you have a feeling that you're going to say anything remotely like that, I probably just, you know, lie and go, nope, don't know the guy, and walk away.
Well, and, you know, a lot of people, something happens to them when a camera's pointed at them, too, where they suddenly become experts on things they don't know about. And it's I'm not saying it as a criticism of a personal trait, because it happens to everybody. It's a natural reaction that when someone asks you a question and you know you're on TV, there's a tremendous temptation sometimes to speculate in areas where you are not expert.
I think that as humans, we all have this drive to help other people. And so I think it's hard to turn down an opportunity when somebody says, hey, can you help me? Can you talk to me on camera for here, you know, a couple minutes? So probably the natural instinct of most people is, sure, I want to help other people. And, you know, it can be a big bear trap. So you really have to think it through pretty carefully.
What are some opportunities to get the media involved in covering aviation in general and general aviation in particular on a positive basis? I know that these opportunities do exist.
Oh, sure. You know, the kind of stuff we've talked about so far are really reactive kinds of opportunity where an event occurs and suddenly, boom, there might be a microphone in your face, and there the risks definitely go up. On the flip side, I think there are unlimited numbers of proactive kinds of opportunities for coverage in the press, where you as a pilot can, you know, plan things out in advance and approach the media to try and get you know, some positive coverage of something you'd like to showcase. So, for example, a local airport day, for example. I hope that every airport has some type of airport association, and that they're doing things like having annual airport days to showcase the airport and, you know, show the positive kinds of things that it's doing for the community. Those are perfect opportunities to work long in advance with a local newspaper or TV or radio station, and ideally pick one of them to be one of your lead sponsors or co-sponsors. Get them involved in, list them on your posters, have them run public service announcements, send press releases off to all the other local media ahead of the time as well. These kinds of things, I think, are fabulous ways to plan in advance to get good positive coverage. So I think everybody should be considering doing those kinds of things. Also, anytime you see some kind of interesting human interest kind of story, you know, the kind of thing where, hey, there was a 16-year-old person who just did their first solo. You know, that's always kind of newsworthy. People are always surprised when teenagers are flying by themselves. On the opposite end of the spectrum, you know, if you've got a 75-year-old who, you know, just soloed or got their license, you know, I think that's also very newsworthy. So I think anytime you've got events or human interest kinds of stories, it makes sense. Pick up the phone, call somebody, and see if you can get them interested in writing about it.
Now, one of the particular things, too, especially in larger markets, when TV stations have news helicopters, I have noticed that they are between the dearth of news they run across on weekends and, you know, are looking for content, and the fact that they have a helicopter that is racking up fixed expenses, whether they fly it or not. In a lot of cases, if you have a couple thousand people together and they have an opportunity to do a flyby or land and let people see their helicopter, a lot of times they'll send a photographer along or a videographer along to produce a little clip that then ends up running on the news. So there are a lot of opportunities if you think in terms of what they need,
right?
That you can step in and be a provider of that.
Yeah, if you look at during an airport day, if you know, folks haven't done one before, inviting the local traffic watch helicopter, inviting the state police or the local emergency medical service helicopters, those folks are always willing to bring their helicopter out and show, you know, kids, you know, help them climb over the helicopter and see how it's made and things like that. Certainly any of the local flight schools would be willing to set up a booth, and then you can look at, you know, other local community organizations that are looking for exposure as well. So it's pretty easy to get different organizations involved and interested in coming out to hang out at the airport for 4 to 6 hours. Of course, you know, doing some type of low-cost rides for the kids, you know, penny a pound kind of things are, you know, pretty common, where they'll just give lots and lots of young kids and teenagers rides in airplanes. And that's often the first exposure for somebody to an airplane that can later lead to them choosing a career in aviation. So all those are really very positive kinds of ways to expose aviation in the media.
Well, Max, you've given us a couple of things to watch out for and a lot of positive things to think about. And again, I'd urge our listeners, if they want to see what we're talking about, to go to maxtrescott.com. where they'll find not only everything else going on in your life this week, but also a clip of the KNTV coverage on which you appeared regarding U.S. Airways Flight 1549. Max, thanks for taking some time out today.
It's been a fun talking to you again, Paul. Thank you.
My guest has been 2008 National CFI of the Year, Max Trescott. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at www.aero.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.